Our morning of today's daf in Sanhedrin is Tesvav. We are in Yudalamid Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're starting at the two dots. We're going to be starting today with Meister Sheni. Netar Avai Meister Sheni. Ein Damav Yiduim B'Shlosha. Okay, the Gemara now is discussing, once again, how many people do we need for courts. And we're talking now really more about appraisals. But from this standpoint, in terms of an appraisal, basically, to a certain degree, we're going to view them like a court. They're going to be issuing a monetary ruling. And so, therefore, when it comes to certain types of redemption, so we're going to need a panel of three. So that's what we're discussing right now. We're talking about two halachas. We're talking about Netar Avai and Meister Sheni. They're normally put in the same sentence because they both have redemption opportunities. The Torah says that when it comes to Meister Sheni, that's your second 10% in the first, second, fourth, fifth year of the Shemitah cycle. So after giving your Truma Gedola, after giving your Meister Rishon, so you're then going to be giving Meister Sheni. But you want to say give Meister Sheni, really what you're doing is you're separating Meister Sheni, and then the plan is to take it to Yerushalayim and eat in Yerushalayim, being that it's fruit and it's perishable, so it's probably not going to last. So what you're going to do is you're going to redeem it, and you're going to take the money, bring it to Yerushalayim, and eat. Spend the money on food and eat the food in Yerushalayim. So that is one opportunity of redemption. And by Netar Avai, we're talking about a tree in its fourth year. The first 3 years after the tree is planted. So the fruit that grows from it is Arla. And you're not allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to get benefit from it. It's also Bachil Uvehana. And then in the fourth year, so it has the same halacha, which is you take it to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim, or you redeem it, take the money, and purchase food in Yerushalayim with that money. So those are two opportunities where you have opportunities of redemption. So Netar Avai Meister Sheni Shein Damav Yiduim B'Shlosha. So if you don't know how much the value of the food is, so therefore, and you need an appraisal, so you need a panel of three. You need three judges. Tanur Rabbanan Nezu Meister Sheni Shein Damav Yiduim. So the Gemara just gives simple examples of what that means. So Perishei Kivu. So let's say the fruit started rotting. And so now rotten fruit obviously has a lower value. But what exactly is its appraised value? So you're going to get a court together. Or Yain Shehikrim, or wine that started going sour. Or Mao Shechlidu, or money itself that started rusting. So these are scenarios in which now that the appraised value is obviously going to be diminished, in order to get a fair appraised value, so you need a panel of three. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara quotes, Abraisa Meister Sheni She'ein Damav Yiduin, Ponoso B'Shlosha. If I have Meister Sheni, I don't know the exact value, so you're going to need a panel of three to appraise. Lekuchos. Now, you're going to need to get three buyers. What does that mean, three buyers? So Rashi writes very succinctly, Sochrim Bikiyim Bishuma. In other words, you need people who are in the market and people who know market values of such an item. And so basically, they don't have to be expert judges. They just simply have to be involved in commerce. And so they can give you some sort of fair market value. But however, if they're not in the market and they really don't understand what the price, the cost of things are, so then you shouldn't have such people being the appraisers. So So the Gemara says now, in terms of, again, who can appraise? You can have a non-Jew appraise. You can have even the owner appraise. Meaning, as long as somebody who's in the market and knows what the market value of these things are, so that's who can be involved in the appraisement. The Gemara wants to know, let's say I do have three appraisers, but they're all basically using the same bank account. Like, for example, I mean, obviously I'm saying that in the more modern sense, but like, for example, a husband and wife basically are sharing the same bank account. So can we call that two separate appraisers or no? In other words, being that they share the same bank account, we can't really call that two separate appraisers. So Tashma ish ushtei nasha po de meister sheni shein dam av yiduin. So the Gemara quotes the Braisa, and the Braisa says that a man with his two wives, so they could serve as the three appraisers for an item for meister sheni that we don't know its value. Sounds like the answer is very clearly yes. That even though they're all sharing the same bank account, they constitute three appraisers. So Gemara says, no, maybe not. Maybe the price is not such a good raya. Doma kigon rav papa ubas abba sura'a. The Gemara says that we could be talking about the kind of relationship, a husband and wife, where they're not sharing the same bank account. The Gemara notes, the Gemara points to Rav Papa and his wife. Rav Papa, who the Gemara elsewhere parenthetically tells us that he was a very successful businessman, and he himself was very wealthy. It happens to be that he married a woman who was also financially independent. We know, the Gemara Ksuvas tells us, that if a woman wants to go into a marriage and say, look, I know you need to support me, but then my earnings go to you, look, I'm doing pretty well in terms of my earnings. You don't have to support me and I'll keep my earnings. And a woman can go into a marriage like that. And so over here, it could be, says the Gemara, that what the Bryce is describing is a man and his two wives, is that his two wives are financially independent. And if that's the case, so then it doesn't prove our question, or it doesn't conclude our question. Rav Yirmiyah's question was, if they all have the same bank account, can they be viewed as three appraisers? And from this Bryce that we just learned together, not necessarily conclusive. Could be talking about a man with his two independent, financially independent wives. Hakdeshus b'shosha, when you're redeeming Hekdesh, you need a panel of three. So said our Mishnah. And the Gemara, back to the Gemara, Masisin Loki Aitana Ditanya, the Gemara notes that this Brisa, which we're about to quote, clearly does not side like our Mishnah, because the Brisa says, Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Afilutin Oshel Hekdesh Trichas Arbenei Adam Liftosa. A fork that belongs to Hekdesh, and now a person wants to redeem it, and now we're looking for its value, you need a panel of 10. That is the opinion of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Our Mishnah clearly doesn't sound like that. Our Mishnah says you only need a panel of three. So Amalei Rav Papa Labai B'Shamalei Rav Elazar ben Yaakov De Amar Kishmo. So the Gemara says, look, this position of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov makes a lot of sense, especially when you consider it in relationship to the opinion of Shmuel. Da'amar Shmuel, Asar Kohanim Ksuvim Beparsha. Now, what the Gemara is noting over here is as follows. Where does this number 10 come from anyway? So, Rashi tells us that you open up the Torah to the end of Sefer Vayikra, and you're going to find over there in Parshas B'chukosai, the Torah describes, has three parshios in a row. The first parsha the Torah has over there is Erchin. A person dedicates his value or somebody else's value, the Erech value. There's an entire Masech to dedicate to this topic. And the idea of an Erech value is that based on your gender and based on your age, so you have a fixed value that the Torah gives, and that can be found in the end of Parshas B'chol Kosai. And there, in those Psukim, the Torah says the word Kohen three times. Next parsha is redeeming an animal. If an animal now belongs to Hekdesh and it's not a carbon, and you want to redeem it, so again the Torah describes that as well, and again the Torah uses the word Kohen three times. Then after that, the Torah talks about redeeming Karka. And in the redemption of Karka, the Torah uses the word Kohen four times. And so 3 plus 3 plus 4 gets you to the number 10. So in terms of how I know I need a panel of 10, so it's by virtue of the fact that the Torah repeats the word Kohen in the entire Parshios of Redemptions a total of 10 times.
Why isn't it 11? Don't you have to have an odd number?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't understand. Now I understand. Right. The Gemara does not ask your question. The Rishonim do ask your question. You'll forgive me, I don't have, what's it called? I saw this in passing, but I don't have a Mar Makam. I can't tell you where to find this. But the Rishonim say that when the Torah gives you a specific number, like, for example, Sanhedrin is made up of 70. Now, I know not everyone agrees to that. Some say 71. But there's an opinion that we saw in our mission that's 70. That's an even number. And what they'll tell you is, yeah, but that's the number the Torah uses. So obviously we generally want an odd number, but when it's when the Torah gives you the number and it's an even number, so you stay with the Torah's number. Admittedly, it's not a satisfying answer, but I saw that as one suggestion. But your question is really good. So anyway, so it says, the word Kohen 10 times. So that means that for appraisals, I need 10. So the Gemara says, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, following this understanding of Shmuel, I always need 10, under all circumstances. But Ella Rabbanu Shlosha Menalahu. But according to the Chachamim, number 3 is a very strange number. V'chitem d'chzivu shlosha karkal shlosha. So the Gemara says, well, maybe you'll tell me. Well, again, the information I just gave you, that Erechin has the word Kohen three times. And by animal, it says three times. By animals, movables. So maybe if I just isolate the parsha of Pidyon Behema, and since the Torah says the word Kohen only three times, so that's why I only need a panel of three. But the Gemara says, but if I follow that logic, here's where I'm going to conclude. Karkos dechziv bu'arba tiske barba. Yeah, but the parsha also mentions by property four, And so that means then that I only need a panel of four. And nowhere do we find that when I'm trying to appraise property, in order to redeem the property, four is going to be sufficient. Everyone's in agreement that you need ten. And meanwhile, our Mishnah states very clearly that for the appraisal property, it's ten. Elamai, the mishame buhu asara, hegdeshus, the mishame buhu shisa, liba shisa. So the Gemara says, because when you get to karka, so that's four as the sum total. And since it's four as the sum total, so therefore, it's four added on to the three, added on already to the other three. Three plus three plus four, it's ten. So the Gemara says, okay, but when you're talking about Behema, the Torah already introduced us to three, and then another three, so that gets you to six. So in other words, if we all operated with the understanding of sum totals, so then for animals and all movables, it should be six. For karka, it should be ten. And again, nobody says that. Meaning that for movables, your options are either going to be three or ten. And for carcass, everyone says it's going to be ten. So Kasha, the Gemara just simply concludes, you know what? The point is very well taken. It's difficult. Meaning this idea that for behema and all movables, I only need a panel of three to appraise it. I don't know where the source of that in the Torah is. And the Gemara just simply says, Kasha, you're right. It's difficult. Okay, Erchen. Now, the Mishnah uses a term that is confusing. The Mishnah says, Erchen HaMetalkel, immovable Erchen. Now, that doesn't make sense, and I'll explain why it doesn't make sense. Because as I explained just a couple of moments ago, the word Erchen is very specific. When the Torah talks about an Erech, if a person says that he's going to give an Erech value of either himself or somebody else, that is a fixed number based on the person's gender and age. And the schedule is found in Parshas Bechukosai. So that's talking about a person. Metalton obviously are movable objects or animals, but in other words, not people. And so when the Mishnah says Erchen Ametalton, movable Erchen, it just doesn't make sense. Erchen is a reference to people, and Metalton is a reference to movable items or animals, but not people. What does the Mishnah mean when it says Erchen Ametalton? It's a simple question. The Gemara is going to give three suggestions. My Erchen Ametalton, Amar Gidol, Amar Rabba, Omer Erech Lizeh Alai. So the Gemara gives the first suggestion, and that of Rav Gidol Marav, and that is that I want to give the erech of this utensil. Now, as a sentence, you did not construct the sentence well. There's no erech to a vessel. So the Gemara says, the Amar Rav Gidol Marav, top of Tezvav Amar Aleph, Ha'om Erech Klizel, I know St. Damav. So you're going to give its value, even though you did not properly construct the sentence. Now, the reason why my time, Adim Adeshi, Nerech Lekli, V'gamar V'am L'shem Damim, Mishum Hachi, no St. Damav. So, the assumption goes like this. You meant Damim, you meant its value. So you didn't do a fantastic job constructing your sentence. You said Erech, but even though that in of itself is not technically true, but we understand what the person's intent was, and therefore we're going to follow his intention. His intention was is that he wanted to give this kli as a donation to the Beit HaMikdash. Yeah, correct. In other words, this idea of reinterpreting his sentence based on his intention, correct. That's a there is other Gemaras that speak to the idea that a person doesn't say things for no reason. He made a sentence. He clearly intended something. Here, it's not a stretch. I mean, this is what the Gemara is suggesting right now. It's not a stretch to say that what he wanted to do was give the value of this kli, even though he said the word erech, which is really not the proper usage of the word. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Hi, Erchen Metaltlin, Erchen Shel Metaltlin Mi Ba'ilei." The Gemara says, "Yeah, but if that's what the Mishnah really meant, the Mishnah could have stated itself better by saying Erchen of Metaltlin." So the Gemara says, "Tini Erchen Shel Metaltlin." The Gemara says, "Fine. So if you're bothered by the way the Mishnah phrases it, so just simply take out your pen and do a little bit of editing of the Mishnah." Now I'm saying it very flippantly, very like, you know, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal to change Nusach HaMishnah, but the Gemara says, but I really like this pshat, and if it's just the language of the Mishnah that bothers you, so, okay. So understand the Mishnah, Erchin Shel Metaltlin. That was suggestion number one. Suggestion number two of the Gemara of Chista Amar Avim, Mematris Metaltlin Erchin. So the Gemara says like this. A second suggestion of the Gemara is that a person did make an Erech donation to the Beis HaMikdash, which means that he donated his value or somebody else's value. And so therefore he's on the hook for whatever the schedule demands in the Torah. Right? Maximum a person would give is 50 shkalim. right? For a male that's between the age of, I think 30, 30 to 50? I should know this. Any, 20 to 50? Okay. So the maximum person gives is 50 shkalim. So he made the pledge, and now he's on the hook to give 50 shkalim, and now he's cash poor. So he now owes the Beis HaMikdash a certain amount of money, but he doesn't have the money. So can he give utensils? The answer, of course, is yes, meaning it has value. Well, how much value does it have? Oh, okay, fine. So he gave it to the Beis HaMikdash, and now he finally got a hold of some money, so now he would like to redeem it. So we're going to have to appraise it. Fine. That is another pshat of the Mishnah. So ha'erchin ha'matalta matalta shel erchim ibayilei. So again, the Gemara says, yeah, but if that's really what the Mishnah meant, the Mishnah could have phrased it better by saying, movable items that was given in lieu or in response to an erich pledge. So the Gemara says, tani matalta shel erchim. And again, the Gemara says, if that's really what bothers you, so just simply, again, edit the Mishnah so that the Mishnah actually says that. So Rabbi Abba Amar Ba'omer Erki Alai. So the Gemara gives now a third pshat of the Mishnah, and that's the following. Very similar to the second pshat, but as we'll see, we're going in the other direction. And that means that a person made a pledge and he says, I'm giving my Erech to the Beis HaMikdash. And now he's on the hook for 50 shkalim. And then he's just simply delinquent. In other words, he's not paying at all. So you know what happens. The Mishnah Erechin describes, and the Gemara over here says the same thing as well, and that is he's going to get a knock on the door. And it's not going to be a pleasant knock, but the Beis HaMikdash is right. He did pledge the money. This is a very serious matter. So now he's going to get a knock on the door, and the Kohen's going to come in, and they're going to basically start collecting. Now, if there's need, he has no money, so they're going to basically take, you know, movable items in his house. So, Bak Kohen Legabos Mimena Metatlan B'Shlosha. I'm sorry, Metatlan B'Shlosha Karkos Basara. So if they're taking movable, so they need a panel of three to appraise him. If they're going to actually take property away from him, obviously we're not talking about the physical removal of property, but in other words, assume ownership of a property, and again, it is to satisfy a pledge that he made, so you're going to get a panel of 10 in order to appraise the property. So that is a third pshat of the Mishnah. Now, Amalei Ravach Mediftel Ravina B'Shlam Alafukim Me'ektesh Bina Shlosha. So the Gemara starts off by saying, look, in pshat number 1 and 2, so what are we doing? We are redeeming something from Hekdesh, meaning in pshat number 1 and 2, Hekdesh has now taken ownership of an item, and we're redeeming it, and the Gemara says, and I get it. I get that I need a panel of 3 in order to give the proper appraisal. Because now we're talking about, basically, Hekdesh parting with an item and getting compensation. We want to make sure that Beis Din gets, I'm sorry, I don't mean Beis Din, the Beis HaMikdash gets fair value for it. And therefore, get a serious appraisal team of for movables 3, for property 10. The Gemara says, "Ela le'iyula le'akta shoshalamali." So the Gemara says, "But I don't understand." In answer number 3, we were talking about something going into the direction of Hekdesh, meaning you're giving it to Hekdesh. Why do I need a panel of 3? If something's going to Hekdesh, so can't I just simply have one person appraise it? So Amalei Svarihi Mali Yule Mali Afukim. But the Gemara immediately dismisses the suggestion, and the Gemara says, really, it shouldn't make a difference. Afukim Aitami Damatai Yule Nami Damatai. Because, again, what's the purpose of appraisal? To make sure that no one makes a mistake. Consider that in answer number 3 of the Gemara, I made a pledge. I'm delinquent. And now, Beis Din is coming, and the Beis HaMikdash is coming, and knocking on my door and taking things. What they want to make sure is that they're not going to get ripped off. Meaning, if let's say we have one person appraising it, and he overvalued what its value was, the item that the Beis HaMikdash is taking, so that means that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be losing out as a result of that. So therefore, in both directions, both in coming and going, where items are either going into the Beis HaMikdash or leaving the Beis HaMikdash, in both cases, in order to make sure that the Beis HaMikdash is getting fair value and not getting ripped off, so I need an appraisal team of for movable 3 and for property 10.
Right, like, yeah. The importance of the person not having the correct value of what he valued, that he doesn't sin. Doesn't that take more precedence? I know we're focusing on the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, but in the end, you don't even have a Beis HaMikdash. Isn't the person's not sinning the most important thing, that he has the exact value?
Right. And also, right. In other words, he wants to make sure that he gives the right value himself. Okay. What you're saying is reasonable. The Gemara is just focusing on the Beis HaMikdash side of it. But you're just providing another perspective. Rabbi Yehuda Omer v'chulei amalei rapapa labai bisham l'Rabbi Yehuda hain dechziv kohen. Now Rabbi Yehuda says that of the appraisal team of 10 people for war, for the redemption of property, so Rabbi Yehuda says one of them is going to be a kohen, the other nine are going to be non-kohanim. Now the Gemara says, in a certain way I get it, because again, like we said a couple minutes earlier, the Torah, when talking about the appraisal team, the Torah keeps referring to each one of the members of the team as being a kohen. So at least one of them is a kohen, that I get. But Ela Rabbanan Kohen Lamalu. But according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, the appraisal team is going to be made up of a panel of 10, and none of them need to be kohanim. And the Gemara says, and I just simply don't get that, because the Torah uses the word kohen to describe every member of the panel of appraisers. And you're telling me that according to the Tanakhama, none of them have to be kohanim? So the Gemara Kashya, the Gemara just basically shrugs her shoulders. The Gemara says, yeah, that's a good question, let's go on. okay. And you know, by the way, we have a Masara that when the Gemara says Tiyufta, that's a refutation. When the Gemara says Kasha, it's basically like, you're right, it's difficult, but you know, if we think about it more, I'm sure we can come up with an answer. Okay, I'm not going to come up with an answer right now, but the Kasha is not as dramatic as Tiyufta. Now the Gemara focuses on the opinion of Rav Yehuda, who says that the appraisal team is going to be made up of 10 people, one of them being a kohen. So the Gemara says, "Menani milam Shmuel, asara kohenim k'suvim beparsha chalagufei." I'm sorry, k'suvim beparsha. Let me put a comma there. Okay, so again, it goes back to a point that I made earlier, which is that if you go through the parshios in Buchu Kosai, so three Kohanim by the redemption of Erechin, three Kohanim by the redemption of Behema, four Kohanim by the redemption of properties, so 3 + 3 + 4 = 10. And every time the Torah says the word Kohen. So you know how you got to the number 10 because of the number of mentions of Kohen. But how do we get to the conclusion of one being a Kohen and the next nine being non-Kohanim? So the Gemara goes on to explain exactly how we got here. Chad legufei. So the first time it says kohen, it means kohen. Now hana chavimir achemir. Now the next nine mentions of kohen are exclusions following an exclusion. And like in math, when you multiply two negatives, you get a positive. Similarly, obviously, you know, this is part of the drashos. When you have miyot achar miyot, when you have an exclusion after an exclusion, so it yields the opposite result, which is it's inclusionary. So when the Torah says kohen after kohen, so that second kohen is therefore inclusionary, which means kohen and non-kohen as well. So it's coming to include. If nine is Yisrael and one is a kohen, that would be good. So maskev l'rav huna b'reid rav nasan eim chamisha kohen v'chamisha Yisrael. Gemara says, well, if you follow the pattern carefully, it really should come out that it should be kohen on kohen, kohen on kohen, kohen on kohen, kohen on kohen, and it should come out to be 5 and 5. 5 kohenim and 5 non-kohenim. Consider. The first time it says kohen, that means that you need a kohen. Next time it mentions that it's mir achamir, which means that it's a broader inclusion of kohenim and non-kohenim. Now the third time that it's mentioned, well, what should it mean? It should mean kohen. Because the second time was inclusionary, so that means the third time should be exclusionary. And if you keep following this pattern, so it should come out 5 and 5, which are 5 kohanim and 5 non-kohanim. And yet, the Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah, according to Rav Yehuda, has only the first one being a kohanim, and the next 9 being non-kohanim. And again, the Gemara Kashya, the Gemara says, okay, I hear the question, it's good, let's move on. Adam kayotze behem. The Gemara starts off now, the next discussion of the Mishnah, which is that if I am being maktish, a human being, so the appraisal is going to be set at 10 appraisers. So the Gemara says, Adam ikadosh. So Gemara starts off with a really simple question, and that is, you can't be maktish a person. Now, it's true that you can be maktish an eved kenani. And Tosfos raises this as a consideration, and why didn't the Gemara mention this? But outside of the eved kenani, when it comes to a non-regular Jew, so you can't be maktish that person. And again, yes, it's true that a bechor of a human does have some element of kedusha, but that's me'elah. That happens on its own. You and I can't just simply go over to a person and say, "Now you're hektish." I can't even do it for myself. I'm hektish. I'm not hektish. So what does the Mishnah talking about when the Mishnah says that when a person is imbued with kedusha and now is going to be redeemed, so you do it in front of panel 10? What is the Mishnah even talking about?
Son, Shemuel, to
a Nazir. In other words, but he's a Nazir, but he's not. He doesn't belong to the base of Mikdash. There's no. He's not redeeming the. In other words, dedicating meaning dedicating his life. But in other words, in terms of actual ownership, there's no change of ownership. You're not redeeming him. The Gemara's question is very straightforward. We don't become kadosh. So in this sense of ownership and redemption. So Amar Rabbi Abba be Omer Demei Alai. So the Gemara says, okay. So what the Mishnah therefore must mean is that a person is donating his value to the Beis Hamikdash. Meaning, as opposed to Erech, where it's a fixed value, the person says that I'm going to give whatever I would go for on the open market. Now, I'm not going to be sold on the open market, but if I were being sold on the open market, whatever that price would fetch, that's what I'm going to give to the Beis Hamikdash. And now that he made such a pledge, it demands an appraisal. And that appraisal is going to be done in front of a panel of 10. D'tanya, and the Gemara quotes this as a braisa. Homer demei alai shaman osoke evan animka b'shuk. Ve'evet ikish l'karko. So, if a person makes such a pledge that he's going to give his market value, his damim, so then you're going to appraise it like you would appraise property, meaning in front of a panel of 10. By Rabbi Avin, Seir ha'omed ligazes bekama. Now, let's say that a person has hair, and he has a haircut appointment. And so now it is, he plans on getting a haircut. Do we view that hair as connected to the body or disconnected from the body? Kigazas dami, ukishosha, ukemichuber dami, uva asara. So now the hair that stands to be cut, do we view that as movables? Meaning even though it's right now currently connected to the body, but he has the appointment. Now, I'm being a little bit, I'm being a little bit dramatic when I say haircut appointment, but you get the point. In other words, he does plan on cutting it off, and therefore it should be viewed like metaltlin, using the principle of kol ha'omed. When something stands to be whatevered, we have this, the Gemara has many different usages of this idea, of this concept, so we view it in its current state as if it's already done. So the Gemara says, so therefore the hair should be viewed like movables, or maybe no. By virtue of the fact that it's still connected to the body, it's still not like the body, and the human body in halacha is treated like karka, and therefore I need a team of 10. Tashma, makdish hasavdo, in mo'alim bo. So the Gemara says that when a person is makdish, his slave, there is not subject to mi'ila, as this is just simply an exemption of the Torah that there is no mi'ila by karka, and an eved has the same halachic status as karka. And Rav Shimon Gamliel, omer mo'alim b'sa'aro. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, that's true, but you're subject to mi'ila by the hair of the eved kanani. V'kaimelan d'b'sa'aro me'ligazos pligi. Now, we're not talking about just any hair, but hair that stands to be cut. Now, Shmamina. So the Gemara says, so what do you see over here? You see over here that hair that stands to be cut is subject to a debate whether it's viewed as already cut and therefore movables, and therefore only needs a panel of 3 for appraisal, or since it's still attached and connected, therefore it's viewed as part of the person, therefore like karka, and therefore needs an appraisal, a panel of 10 for appraisal. Rashi over here says that what they used to do with hair is they used to make kalim out of hair. Okay, Rashi says right here on the daf. Name ahava tanai kahani tanai. The Gemara says that maybe these tanaim are following another machlokus amongst other tanaim did not. Now we all know, we've recently learned Bava Metzia. Gemara and Bava Metzia discussed it in the beginning of the Masechta extensively, and that is the idea of Moda B'Mikzas. Moda B'Mikzas means that when I make a partial admission on a claim you make against me, so obviously I will have to pay the partial admission that I make, but on the other part which I'm denying, I have to make a shvua of what's called Moda B'Mikzas. We also know, as a rule, that there is no shvua on karka. So, if the claim against me is property and I make a partial admission on the property, I don't have to make a shvua, because simply it's karka. So the Gemara over here has the following debate. Did not. Rabbi Meir Omer Yeshram Shein Kekarka Ve'inan Kekarka. Things that are like property but are not like property. I know that's confusing, but let's follow. Ein Chachamim Odin Lo, but the Chachamim simply do not accept this idea. Ketzad. An example. Esther Gefanim Tunos Masati Lach. So the claim made against the person is that I asked you to wash my 10 vines, which had fully ripened grapes on it, and the grapes were about to be harvested. And I went away for a little bit, and I asked you to watch it. And then, V'hala Omer Eina Ela Chamesh. And the defendant says, everything you're saying is right, but the number is wrong. You didn't ask me to watch 10 vines, you only asked me to watch 5 vines. The other 5, I don't know what you're talking about. And so, this is a partial admission. on property or movables? Exactly the question. So Rameir Mechayev, so Rameir says that this is considered movables. Despite the fact that the grapes are connected to the ground, but they are standing to be harvested, and therefore we view them as harvested, and therefore we treat the grapes like movables. Therefore it's subject to the Shavuot Mordeh B'Mitzvos. And the Chachamim say, no, current state right now, it's connected to the ground. Therefore, status-wise, it's like karka. Therefore, you don't make a Shavuot Mordeh B'Mitzvos. And the Gemara just simply reiterates the point that we just made, and that is that these particular grapes were ready to be harvested, and therefore we have a debate now in terms of how to view them, as if they're already harvested or no. And the Gemara now would like to do is make a parallel between this debate we learned and the previous machlokas. In the previous machlokas, we talk about hair standing to be cut, and a machlokas whether or not we view it as cut or not cut already. And the same thing with the grapes. The Gemara makes the differentiation between these two machlokas. Lo. I feel it's Rameir. Ad kan lo kama Rameir asam kol kama deshavka lohu mekash kashi. The Gemara says that there is a realistic difference between hair and grapes. Grapes on the vine that stand to be harvested, leaving them on the vine would be detrimental. In other words, once they're fully ripened, so then left on the vine, they're just going to get weaker and you don't want it. So there it is an even stronger argument to make that once they're ready to be harvested, we're going to view them as if they're already harvested. However, when it comes to your hair, as it's connected to the person, the longer it's on the person, the better it gets. Okay. So therefore, there's less of an argument to make of kol ha'omer when it comes to hair. So the Gemara just simply says that you don't necessarily have to say that these two machlokesim are running parallel one to another. Dina nefashos. Okay. We are now on the topic of, it's an indelicate discussion right now in the Gemara, but it's Torah. And as indelicate as it is, it's the same Torah, the same schar we get for learning the upcoming Gemara. And we're talking now about bestiality. And the Beis Din put together in order to try such a case. Now the Torah says in a number of different psukim that a man sleeps with an animal, a woman sleeps with an animal, and on both sides of the act of sleeping, meaning being, well, for the man, we're talking about for the man, for the woman, she's always going to be the recipient, but for the man, either he's the recipient or if he is the more dominant player in the bestiality, in all the cases, it's a chiyuv misa, it's a capital crime with a capital punishment to be tried in front of a court of 23. And when I say to be tried, oddly enough, now the man's tried in front of 23, that's not odd, that all capital crimes, you're going to be tried in front of a court of 23. The animal also is going to be tried in front of a court of 23. Now, of course, that's odd. An animal does not have intent, does not have will, does not have a yetzahara, you know, in this regard. And does not have bechir chafshis. And so it's a little bit strange, but gzeres hakasuv, that's what the Torah demands, that the animal is going to be tried in front of a court of 23 and the animal is going to be put to death. The Gemara now is just seeking sources for for everything I just said. Where do we see this in the Torah? So the Gemara now is going to cite the Pesukim. Ka'pasuk v'tana loshna rova zachav loshna rova nekeva. So the Gemara says that when it comes to a man, whether he is on the whether he's going to be serving as like the receiving part of the bestiality or on the giving part of the bestiality in either direction, so he's going to be tried in a capital crime with a court of 23 and the animal as well. So Bishlam Rova Nekeva Diksiv Arakta Isha Vesa Behema. So the Gemara says that if the animal sleeps with a woman, and we're not talking about where the woman was being forced against her will. We're talking about where she is a active participant in the act. So the Torah says, "Verakta es ha'ishav es ha'behema." So the Torah says very clearly, you kill the woman and the animal, and with the same methodology, meaning in front of a court of 23. Ela rova zacher minalan, but how do I know the same thing is true if the animal has an active relations with a man, and again the man is on the receiving part? So dechsev kol shochev im behema mosimas. Now the Torah says kol shochev im behema. Now the way the Torah states it It's that the man is having relations with the animal. We mean that the animal is the on the giving end, not on the receiving end. So the Gemara says, Now the Gemara says, well, over here, we could interpret the Torah over here to describe the man being the nishkav, not the shochev. Why? Because va'afke rechmana b'lashon shochev, la'akushi nishkav l'shochev. Ma'shochev hu v'hemto b'esrim v'shlosha, af nishkav hu v'hemto b'esrim v'shlosha. How do we have the right to interpret the Torah that way? So Rashi points out over here, because I already have another pasuk in the Torah that tells us that a man with an animal is a capital crime. Rashi, second to last line on the Amud, Ish Asher Yitein Shechvaso, the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, tells us that if a man is with an animal, that's a capital crime. So I already have a pasuk dedicated to a man with an animal, so therefore when I go back to Parshas Mishpatim, and the Torah over there says that you're going to put the man and the animal to death, we could interpret that pasuk to mean Nishkav, because it's the rule of Im Eino Inyan. If I already have a pasuk telling me one halacha, if I have another pasuk similar, I could interpret it to mean something which is somewhat related. Okay. So we therefore have psukim that teach us that if a man is on either side of the act of bestiality, so it's a capital crime, and both he and the animal are put to death in front of a Beis Din of 23. Continuing in the Gemara. Amalei Abai LaRabbi Mimai Dahai V'Gam Balav Yumas. Sorry, let me read the heading first. Shur Haniska Besim V'Shosha Shenem Rashur Yisakav V'Gam Balav Yumas Kimisa Zabam Kach Misa Zashur. Your animal, Rahman al-Slan, kills somebody. Okay, so your animal now is subject to the death penalty. And the Torah says in Parshas Mishpatim that not only is your animal subject to the death penalty, V'Gam Balav Yumas, and the owner also is going to be put to death. Now we all know that if your property kills somebody, it's terrible, it's tragic, but you're not a murderer. You owned an animal that murdered somebody. Now, the Torah says that your animal is put to death, but you're not going to be put to death. However, the Torah says, Gam ba'alav yumas, that the owner is also going to be put to death. Now, what that does mean, as we're going to see in just a moment, is that we're going to assess a fine to the owner of the animal, and that he's going to have to pay. And that's part of the Torah Shabbat Peh. But the Torah says, Gam ba'alav yumas. So what the Gemara is going to entertain for just a moment is that maybe we should actually kill the owner, as per the instructions of the Torah. Amalei Abai LaRabbi, Mimai Dahai V'Gam Ba'alav Yumas L'Chemisus Balem K'Chemisus Ashur. Hu Da'asa. Now, what our Mishnah taught us is that, what is the Torah trying to instruct us? The Torah is trying to instruct us that when I have the animal facing the death penalty, it's going to be sitting in front of a panel 23. Now, you're going to say to yourself, well, didn't we just say that? Let's keep everything nice and clear and organized. The previous discussion on the Gemara was talking about bestiality. We're not talking about bestiality right now. We're talking about an animal that kills. So we know that the animal therefore is put to death. But where in the Torah does it say that the animal is going to be killed in front of a panel 23? Now, by bestiality, we had a special pasuk that got us to that conclusion. Where do we have that by Shor Hanisko? And the answer is because of the pasuk when it says V'gam ba'alav yumas, just like its owner. Had the owner been put to death, even though in this case he wouldn't, but had the owner been put to death, he would have had a court of 23. So too with the Shor Hanisko is going to be the court of 23. What Abai is saying to Rava is, how do you know? Meaning, how do you know that that's what the Torah is trying to teach us? Ema, let us suggest, we're now on the very top of Tesvav Amud Beis. Ema, let's suggest that L'ketalu da'asa, that maybe what the Torah is just telling us very simply is, you'll kill the animal and you'll kill the owner. So now even as a suggestion, it is admittedly very strange, where the owner of the animal, again, is certainly negligent and is certainly derelict, but to say, in other words, but he didn't kill anybody. But still, what the Gemara is suggesting for a moment, and again, the Gemara does have a pasuk, so it has some ground to stand on, and the Torah says, Gam ba'alav yumas, and maybe what the Torah is just simply trying to teach us is that you kill the animal and you kill the owner as well. So the Gemara says, Im kein lichta v'gam ba'alav v'lishtok. So the Gemara says, well, if that's what the Torah wanted to teach us, the Torah could have just simply said, Hashor yisakev v'gam ba'alav, kill the animal and its owner. So the Gemara says, well, if the Torah would have said that, you know what we would have concluded? Well, how do I kill the animal? The Torah says, skila. How will I kill its owner? Skila. So the Gemara says, but that's impossible. That's an impossible conclusion. Why? Because b'skila sakadach katol iu b'sayif mamona b'skila. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why it's an impossible conclusion. If he were to kill with his own hands, how would he be executed? With sayif, decapitation. And so, let me try to explain this. And this is a tenet that runs throughout the entire Masechta. So, you just simply have to accept it. I don't know how else to say it. Just accept it. There are four different capital punishments in the Torah. There are four different ways of being executed. And the Gemara has a pecking order of which one is harsher than the other. Skila is the worst. Although not everyone agrees to that, but for our purposes right now, let's say nice and simple. Skila is the worst, and when I say the worst, I mean it's the harshest form of capital punishment. Decapitation is to a lesser degree. It's less harsh. So that is, again, we could do this in more detail, but for our purposes right now, that's sufficient information. So the Gemara is now saying basically, look, I can't imagine that if you kill with your own hands, you're only going to be subject to the sayif punishment, which is lesser. But if your animal kills, you're going to get skila? The Gemara says that's just, it's inconceivable. So the Gemara says, Vidilma, hi dekazu rachmani yumas lakuli ilave lafuki mesayif lechenik. So the Gemara says, well, maybe when the Torah adds the word yumas, what the Torah is coming to tell us is the following. Maybe the owner should be put to death. Sure. Meaning, your animal killed somebody, your animal is going to be stoned, and the owner itself also is going to be put to death. And by the Torah saying, you must, maybe what the Torah is doing is the Torah is cutting you a little bit of a break. In that, instead of getting decapitation sayif, you're only going to get chenek. And so now you breathe a short sigh of relief, as now your execution gets downgraded from sayif to chenek. Now when I say you're going to breathe a short sigh of relief, it'll be a really short breath because you're going to be strangled to death. But still, it's a lesser form of capital punishment. So the Gemara is... wait one second. The Gemara is just trying to work out this line of logic. So the Gemara says Hanich Laman Damer Chenek Chamor. So the Gemara says El Laman Damer Chenek Kill Ma'ik Lamemer. Now, where do we rank? How do you rank Chenek versus Sayef? So it's subject to a debate, and again, we'll see this later on in the Masechta. Now, some say that Chenek is harsher, and some say that Sayef is harsher. So, if you take the position that Chenek, the strangulation, is harsher, so then the word Yumas really is now a totally superfluous word, and then we could just simply say, like we said earlier, and it really means that the owner is not put to death. But if Chenek, in fact, is a lighter form of the death penalty, so then the word Yumas may come to give us a downgrade. And instead of getting Sayif, you're actually going to get Chenek. And again, that's a little bit of relief, and maybe that's what the Torah means. So the Gemara, again, to all this says, Lo Sakadacha. The Gemara says again, even though we entertained it, the Gemara says, don't entertain this as a Havamina. Dechzivim Kofar Yushas Alav. Because the Gemara says, look, because read the next pasuk in the Torah. What does the Torah say? That you kill the owner, and then you allow the owner to pay his way out. Can you pay your way out of the death penalty? So the Gemara says, we know that if a person is subject to the death penalty, paying your way out of it is simply not an option. So when the Torah says, Gam ba'alav yumas, if we were to understand it literally, that the owner of the animal is to be put to death, so then there should be no option of buyout. By virtue of the fact that the Torah said that there's a buyout, must mean that the death penalty cannot be taken literally. Adarab, the Gemara says again, if you're allowing logic to dictate the terms over here, I could make the following argument. Mishim hu gufa, I'm sorry, mishim hi gufa, katol iu lo tizke le b'mamona, ela b'katala, katol shoro lefer gnafshe b'mamona. Gemara says, well, we can make the following differentiation. If you yourself killed somebody with your own hands, so then there is no buyout. You are subject to the execution and there's no option of a buyout. But if your animal killed somebody, principally you should be subject to the death penalty, but because it was your animal, not you, there's an option for a buyout. So the Gemara says, so just because there's a buyout option doesn't mean that you're not subject to the death penalty. Maybe you are, with an option of buying out. The Gemara finally concludes that if left to logic, we could make the argument that maybe the owner of the animal is in fact subject to the death penalty. However, the Gemara quotes a drasha, and the drasha is that it's, we just read a couple of parshiyos ago, in the end of Sefer Bamidbar, the Torah says that who do you kill, who do you execute, I should say? Only the murderer himself. If you murder, so then you're subject to execution. But if your property murders, meaning if your animal murders somebody, you're not subject to execution. So therefore, we know that as a fundamental rule, a person will not be killed just because his animal killed somebody. And therefore, when the Torah says, v'gam ba'alav yumas, it cannot mean that we are even entertaining for a moment that the owner of the animal is actually going to be killed. What is the Torah therefore trying to communicate to us? That just like when a person stands trial for a capital crime, it's done in front of a court of 23, so too when the animal is standing trial, it's done in front of a court of 23. Ibai Lahu, the Gemara asks now a question which is interesting, and interesting that the Gemara is even asking it. Shur Sinai Bekama. We know that at Mamad Har Sinai 3,300 years ago, so a perimeter was set around the mountain, and nobody was to cross that perimeter. And the crossing of that perimeter around the mountain is subject to the death penalty. And the Gemara now wants to know that if an animal crossed that perimeter, would any subject to the death penalty, would it be done in front of a court of 23? Now we know that we just got done concluding that for an animal involved in bestiality and for an animal that kills somebody, you kill the animal in front of a court of 23. The Gemara says, but that's true for halachas that apply la'olam va'ed. However, the trespassing of the perimeter of Mamad Har Sinai was a one-time prohibition. A temporary prohibition. And the Gemara now is entertaining this idea that maybe we wouldn't learn out the halachas of temporary prohibitions from permanent prohibitions. So Tashma, Denira Mibar Cheskel, Im Behemoth Im Ish Lo Yichya, Ma Ish Bechav Gimel, Apehema Bechav Gimel. And the Gemara says that the Torah over there, in detailing and outlining this prohibition of trespassing that perimeter, the Torah says if a man or an animal were to trespass subject to the death penalty, well, a man is subject to a court of 23, so too the animal as well. Basically, the Gemara says yes, he's going to be tried in front of 23. Now, it's an interesting question. It's interesting that the Gemara asks this question because Tosfos is bothered by this. The Gemara on a couple of occasions throughout Shas say that if something is historical, so it's not like we're not interested, but we don't care. And I want to be careful about how I say that. When I say we don't care, meaning the Gemara's expression is my dahava hava, meaning on a historical on historical halacha. So it happened. But if it doesn't impact us nowadays in terms of our halachic practice, so it's just simply a historical footnote, and like it's not something that we normally spend time in the Beis HaMedrash discussing. And this is the Gemara's expression, my dahava hava. So here, Mamad Har Sinai happened 3,300 years ago. We don't have this event again. This will not come up in a halachic discussion again. And so why did the Gemara entertain this question? Why did the Gemara conclude on the question? Why don't we just simply say, my dahava hava? It was, and it's not going to happen again. Tosfos is bothered by this question. Tosfos' own answer to this question is, well, we are going to be reading the Psukim, and we want to know Pshat in the Psukim. Personally, I do find Tosfos' answer difficult, because knowing that the animal is going to be tried in front of a court of 23, that's part of the pshat in the pasuk. I need to know that in order to understand the pasuk. So I struggle a little bit with Tosfos' answer. In the footnotes over here in the Masifta, he quotes a fascinating answer. He quotes in the Yerushalmi. He quotes the Meiri. He quotes the Yerushalmi, and he suggests. The Meiri suggests that this question of trespassing a perimeter, being subject to the death penalty, doesn't just apply to Mamad Har Sinai. It applies to any Shekhinah presence, meaning Mishkan Shiloh, meaning the Beit HaMikdash, meaning if a non-sanctioned animal were to step foot into the base of Mikdash, subject to the death penalty, just like by Mamon Har Sinai. Okay, now we don't have any Gemara in the Bavli making mention of this, but the Yerushalmi says that would be now practical application. I mean, I understand you and I, we don't have a base of Mikdash, we're going to mourn that tonight and tomorrow, but in other words, but in principle, we should be having a base of Mikdash, and the Yerushalmi says that would be the application. Okay, let's continue. We are halfway down on Tezvav Amud Beis, Ha'ari V'Hazze'ev. Am Reish Lakish V'hu She'emisu, Avalo He'emisu Lo. We're now talking about killing wild animals. So, the Mishnah says you have a right to kill them, but in front of a court of 23. The Gemara says only if this animal has historically killed, otherwise no. This is the opinion of Reish Lakish. Amakas of Yeshlem Tarbus V'Yeshlem Balim. So, the Reish Lakish is clear of the opinion that these animals are all domesticable. Okay, not, I know it's not the best English word, but it can be domesticated, and therefore can have an owner, and therefore we're going to treat it like the Shor HaNiskal. Now, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Af HaPi Shelo HaMisu, and Rabbi Yochanan says, no, open season. Oh, it's you have, you don't need a license. It's open season on these deadly animals, and you can kill them even if they have historically not killed. Now, Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that these animals cannot be domesticated, and therefore your right to kill them exists under any and all circumstances. You see a snake, according to Rav Yochanan, open season. Go ahead. Take a stab at it. So Tanan Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer says that if you take the initiative and kill them, good for you. Now the Gemara says, Bishlam Rav Yochanan Maizach Zachalaran. Now according to Rav Yochanan, you know, makes perfect sense. What did you just do? You killed a wild animal. What are you, Zoche? You have a brand new pair of snakeskin boots. So Rabbi Eliezer's statement makes perfect sense when it says that you're Zoche. You have merited, meaning you have physically gained the hide of the animal. But Ela L'Reish Lakish L'Maizacha. So the Gemara says, but according to Reish Lakish, what are we talking about when it says that you killed the animal? You killed a domesticated animal that has killed somebody. Now, what did you get? You don't get the hide of the animal. In other words, it has the status of Shor HaNiskal. You know what happens to a Shor HaNiskal after it's killed? You're not allowed to get any benefit from the animal itself. So what does it mean when, according to Reish Lakish, when it says you're Zoche? What are you Zoche? So Kev Shemiso, Shavinu Rabbanan Kaman Degamar Dinayu, Visuri Nan Hanai Ninhu. Sorry, the Gemara just spelled out what I spelled out, that you're not getting any benefit from the animal. What are you Zoche? My Zoche Zoche L'Shamayim. So the Gemara says, you know what you're Zoche? You are merited with doing the right thing. So that's the mitzvah. He did a mitzvah. That's how you're Zoche. Tanya Kavasi, the Reish Lakish, the Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting Reish Lakish. Echad Shor She'emis, Echad Behema V'Chai She'emiso, Bichav Gimel. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Shor She'emis, Besrim V'Shtolsha, Ushar Behema V'Chai She'emis, Kol HaKodim Lahargam, Zacha Behem L'Shamayim. The Gemara quotes the Brisa says like Reish Lakish, that you are going to be Zoche, but Zoche L'Shamayim. Meaning that when are you going to be killing these animals? Only after they historically killed somebody. Then only then can you kill. And in terms of what did you benefit, what did you gain? Because you ain't walking away with a pair of brand new snakeskin boots. What you merit is a pat on the back, and you did the right thing. Rabbi Kiva Omer V'chule, Rabbi Kiva and Tanakama Ikebeina Nachash. Now in the Mishnah, Rabbi Kiva essentially says the same thing as the Tanakama, and the Gemara notes that the difference between Rabbi Kiva and the Tanakama is going to be a snake. Meaning that according to the Tanakama, a snake is going to be treated like all other animals, meaning subject to being domesticated, and therefore can only be tried after it kills and only in front of a court of 23. And on this point, Rabbi Kiva says no, that all other animals are domesticated and domesticatable, the snake being the exception to the rule. Ein Dunin. Okay, we are up to the next section of the Mishnah. We're talking about now judging an entire tribe. The Gemara wants to know, what are we talking about when we're talking about the trial of an entire tribe? Hey, Shevet, Dechata B'mai. Gemara says, let's understand, what are we saying? Elam Shevet Shechilos HaShabbos. So, are we talking about the entire tribe who went rogue and the entire tribe violated the Shabbos. So, Amad the Palag Rechman Ben Yechid Lamerubin Linyan Avodas Kochavim Bishar Mitzvos Mipalag. Now, is there a difference between one individual sinning versus an entire community? So, yes, but in a very limited area. And that is specifically by Avodah Zarah. If you have a city worshipping Avodah Zarah, so that city now is an Ir Hanidachas, subject to a different set of rules. In fact, in the 8th parak of Sanhedrin, we're going to be talking about the unique set of rules set by the Ir Hanidachas. But only in Avodah Zarah do we make a difference between individuals versus a community. But if we're talking about any other type of capital crime, like Shabbos, for example, it's not going to make any difference. So why would the Mishnah say that if you have an entire Shevet, they're going to be tried with a court of 71? No, they're not. Meaning every individual who violated the Shabbos will be tried in front of a court of 23. And it's not going to make a difference whether it's one or an entire Shevet. So basically, what we need is a simple pshat in our Mishnah. What does our Mishnah mean when it says that the Shevet is tried in front of a court of 71? Ela b'Shevet shehudach. So the Gemara says that we're talking about where the entire tribe is served Avodah Zarah. Meaning, basically, what the Gemara now is suggesting and entertaining is that the Mishnah is talking about Ir Hanidachas. But it's not talking about the city that went went rogue. We're talking about an entire Shevet. But the Gemara says, L'memer de bedina de rabbin dainina lai, come on. So the Gemara says, okay, but Ir Hanidachas is for a city. Is Ir Hanidachas for an entire tribe? The Gemara now is going to argue, no, it's not for an entire tribe. In fact, lo k'Rabbi Yoshi v'lo k'Rabbi Yonasan, d'tanya, the Gemara quotes a braisa. Ad kama osin ir hanidachas. What is the parameter of an ir hanidachas? So, miyud v'ad kuftiv Rabbi Yoshi. Rabbi Yoshi says, from 10 to 100, less than 10 is not considered a city. More than 100 is not considered a city as well. It's considered a tzibor. And a tzibor has a different, you don't apply the rule of Ir Hanidachas. These numbers, where do they come from? So, unclear. But in other words, but Rav Yoshia gives very clear parameters of 10 to 100. And Rav Yonasan Omer Mikufad Rubo Shel Shevet. And Rav Yonasan says no. A city could be qualified from 100, population of 100, to the majority of a tribe. But even Rav Yonasan, who obviously holds a bigger number, but he says only up to the majority of a tribe. V'afil Rav Yonasan lo kamar ela ruba, av akulo lo. But once you have an entire tribe, that's not an Ir Hanidachas, and therefore not subject to the exceptional Ir Hanidachas penalty. So, once again, we're really back to square one. Where do we, under what circumstances are we going to have a tribe sinning and subject to a Sanhedrin of 71? Again, once you're beyond Ir Hanidachas, so every person is going to be tried on a regular capital case basis of 23. So Amar Rav Masna Hacha B'Nasi. So as we turn now to the top of Tzayin Amud Aleph, tomorrow's daf. So the Gemara says we're talking about Nasi Shevet Shechata, Askina. We're talking about now where it's not the Shevet, the population of the Shevet, but we're talking about the leader of a Shevet. Milo Amar Ravada Ba'ava. So the Gemara now quotes the following. Now, this is a dialogue between Yisro and Moshe, and this is where Yisro counsels Moshe to set up a court system. And the Gemara says, Kol Adavar HaGadol Yaviu Eilecha, Dvarv Shel Gadol. So now, the simple way to understand the pasuk is that, look, Moshe, here's what you should do. Set up a court system where you have a lower court, you have a higher court, and then, ultimately, you'll be the Supreme Court. Very similar to the court system set up here in our country. And basically, the matters that are straightforward and simple, let the lower courts decide. And if the matter's too great, so then you're going to decide. What the Gemara is now doing is the Gemara is darshaning. And the Gemara is saying that when the pasuk says the word gadol, it's not talking about the difficulty of the court case, but rather it's talking about the defendant. If the defendant is a gadol, meaning he's a leader of a tribe, so then that case immediately goes to you. Now you, Moshe Rabbeinu, are tantamount to a Sanhedrin. So basically now what we're saying as Pshat in our Mishnah is that if the defendant is a Nasi, so immediately that goes now and becomes the Sanhedrin case of 71. So the Gemara says, Ulam Reb Elazar. So we have now offered one Pshat in our Mishnah. When our Mishnah says that a Shevet is to be tried in front of 71, we mean the Nasi of the Shevet. The Gemara now is going to offer another Pshat. We are three lines down. Ulam Reb Elazar Bebayin Al Iske Nachalos. We're talking about where there is a land dispute, and specifically tribal territorial dispute. So this now is going to be adjudicated by a court of 71. And the Gemara says, and look, when we originally came into Eretz Yisrael and allocated the land, it's done through a Sanhedrin of 71. So on any territorial tribal dispute, it's going to be done by a court of 71. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the argument, if that's the rationale, the Gemara says, well, the original allocation was done with a lottery, and with the Urim V'Tumim, worn by the Kohen Gadol, and the entire Jewish people were there. And you want to tell me that anytime we have any kind of subsequent territorial dispute between two tribes, we're going to need all that as well? So the Gemara says, I really prefer the first pshat, which is shevet means the nasi of the shevet. Ravina amar la'olam b'shevet shehudach. So Ravina says, no, we're going to go back to our first pshat, and we're talking about the tribe that becomes an ir anidach. So the Gemara says, now, what was your criticism about that pshat? We know that once it's a tribe, it's no longer an ir hanidachas, and now it's a tribe, and therefore everyone's going to be tried in the normal parameters. To which the Gemara says, "In afagav dekalina biyachid, beidina derabin dainin alei." So the Gemara says, here what we're going to do is we're going to basically make a split decision, and that's the following. Look, if I have an entire tribe serving idolatry, so are they going to be killed with the ir hanidachas punishment of Saif? The answer is no. They're going to be executed with the standard Avodah Zarah punishment of Skila. But in terms of the number of judges, it's going to be 71. Milo Amar Rabbi Chama, Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Otsis Isha Hu, Ois Isha Hahi, Ish Visha Atamotse Lisharecha, Viatamotse Kol Ir Kulo Lisharecha. So, when it comes to an individual sinning, so there you're going to take him out to the shar, to the gate, meaning in front of a Beis Din, the Sanhedrin Katana, the court of 23. But once it's an entire city, so then an entire city does not get taken out to the gate, meaning the Sanhedrin of 23, but the entire city rather is taken to the Sanhedrin. So, so if I have an entire tribe that's sinning, so even though the method of execution is going to be skila like regular avodah zarah, not like the ir hanidachas, which is besayef, but in terms of the court's going to be a court of 71. Okay, lo es navi hasheker. Now I know I'm a little bit over here, but tomorrow, unfortunately, we're not going to be learning. So get ahead so that Wednesday morning we'll have a better chance of catching up. So, a Navi Sheker, a false prophet, he has to be tried in front of the Sanhedrin Agadol of 71. The Gemara says, I'm learning now through Gzera Shefer from Zakin Mamre. Zakin Mamre, second time we're talking about it now in our Perek, is talking about the Dayan Mumcha, who knows what the Beis Din has ruled and is still ruling against what the Beis Din concluded. And he also subject to the death penalty in front of a court of 71. So the Gemara says, and we're learning this out now through Gzera Shava. Who? So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. No. The Hazada mentioned by the Zakin Mamre, that's not talking about the Sanhedrin that he's arguing with, which is 71. It's talking about the actual execution. And the Zakin Mamre is not tried in front of a court of 71. I know I said that just a moment ago, but the Gemara is now correcting. He's not being tried in front of a court of 71. He has to argue with the Beis Din of 71. But in terms of the actual trial itself, it's done in front of 23. So, once we're here, so the Gzera Shava now is not going to help us. because a Navi Sheker is actually tried in front of a court of 71. So Elam Reish Lakish Gamar Davadavra Mehamra Asam. So the Gemara says, okay, we're learning actually a different Zereshava of Davar Davar. Right, Rashi goes through the Psukim. I'm not going to go through them right now. But in other words, the rebellion itself of the Zaken Rami is done against 71. Connect that to the actual trial of the Navi Sheker, which is going to be done in front of a court of 71. So v'lahadra zakim amr v'ligmar hazad hazad demi Navi Sheker. So the Gemara says, well, once there is a portal of Gzereshava opening between these two parshios, so why don't I just simply say, well, if the zakim amr is tried in front of a court of 23, so why don't we say the same thing's true regarding the Navi Sheker? So the Gemara says, gamir hazad, I'm sorry, davar davar gamir, hazada hazada lo gamir. So the Gemara says that the one Gzereshava we have as a tradition, and the other Gzereshava we do not have a tradition. Rashi reminds us, Gzereshava can only be learned only when you have a Mesorah. And if you don't have a Mesorah, so then you can't learn it. Let's do one more piece of Gemara together. Velo is Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol can only be tried in front of a Sanhedrin of 71 in the event that a Kohen Gadol is going to be tried. Again, we go back to that pasuk in Yisro, where we're going to interpret the word gadol over here not being the case being difficult, but the defendant being gadol. And over here, like the words fit literally, the kohen gadol. So the Gemara says, Meisvei, davar gadol, davar kasha. Now the Gemara quotes a brisa, and this brisa clearly does not accept the pshat we just said. The brisa says, davar gadol means the case itself is difficult. Atomer, davar kasha, reino ala davar shel gadol. And this brisa entertains that maybe gadol means a kohen gadol. Keshu omer, esa davar kasha, yavi la moshe, are davar kasha amur. So the Gemara says, this brisa clearly concludes that the word gadol is not talking about the defendant, it's talking about the case itself. Fine. So the Gemara says, Hudamar ki aitana. So the Gemara says, yeah, but our Mishnah is following this Braisa. And the Gemara now quotes another Braisa, Ditanya. Davar gadol, dvarav shel gadol, atomer, dvarav shel gadol, oino ela davar kasha. So here the Braisa clearly understands the word gadol to be talking about the defendant. Meaning, if the defendant is a gadol, i.e. he's an Asi, or like what we're discussing right now, i.e. he's a Kohen Gadol, so immediately it goes to you, Moshe. And you, Moshe, are tantamount to the Sanhedrin. Kishu Amar, Davar Kasha, Hare Davar Kasha Amor. And as far as Davar Kasha is concerned, we have another pasuk that already tells us Davar Kasha, that difficult matters are going to be sent to Moshe. So when we say, when Yisro now says Davar Gadol, what is that talking about? Ha-mani mekayim Davar Gadol, Dvarav Shel Gadol. So it's referencing a davar gadol, meaning the defendant is a gadol. So our Mishnah follows not the first brisa, but rather the second brisa. V'haytana trei krai lamali. So the Gemara says, now, as far as the first brisa is concerned, that felt that gadol and kasha are synonymous, well, why would the Torah use two terms to describe the same thing? So the Gemara says, chal tzavabam v'chal asiya. So the Gemara says, one is to tell the instruction, and the other is to tell us the actual performance that Moshe did as per the instruction. V'idach im ken lichtov, I gadol, gadol, I kasha, kasha. My gadol my kasha shma min atarta. And the counter argument is that if you wanted to tell me both about the instruction and the performance, you could repeat the word gadol twice, or you could repeat the word kasha twice. By virtue of the fact that the Torah uses two different words, it's communicating two different ideas. If the case is difficult, it gets bumped up to Moshe. If the defendant is a gadol, that too gets bumped up immediately to Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay. Okay, we'll stop over here tomorrow. Tomorrow, unfortunately, we're not learning. We pick it up on Wednesday morning. Wednesday morning, we start towards the bottom of the Amud on Tetzayin Amud Aleph.